everyone.
Good morning, David.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Great. Please join me in prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual
development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Lovely to see everyone this morning. Reading from Master's Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 23. A subtle principle is cited in the esoteric description of God as the omnipresent creator, the dispenser or bestower of destiny, dutta, who faces in all directions. A dreamer is the creator and sustainer of the destiny, both good and bad, of the images of his dream. Similarly, in the cosmic dream, the divine dreamer is the creator and sustainer of all beings and the dispenser of their destiny through their good and bad karma. In this sense, God predetermines to a great extent the happenings in his cosmic dream and the parts to be played therein by his dream actors. This doesn't mean, however, that man's fate is wholly predestined by an authoritarian deity. God is the maker of destiny, but he has given man the power to react upon destiny. God is the maker of destiny, but he has given man the power to react upon destiny. Each human being receives from God the gifts of free choice by which he can make changes in himself and his world environment. The very power of free will is an expression of the image of God in man, the image in which man is made, the soul or individualized consciousness of God. Therefore, all happenings are determined by a conjunctive effort between God, the macrocosmic creator, and God, the microcosmic creator, through the individualized expression in man. No individual is spared his share of responsibility for any evils or seeming injustices. This is a great confusion oftentimes for people in terms of what is God's will versus what is free will. And in truth, there is no contradiction. It's just simply, perhaps, a limitation in the understanding of the individual. When we're born into this world, there are many things that are predetermined for us. We come into a particular family, that the dynamics of that family, where we live, and so on, you can say are all predetermined. Jesus said, "Not by worry can you add one inch to your height." So there are genetic codes that we are given that seem to determine our hair coloring, our eye coloring, skin coloring, and so forth. And these things are in place. However, within that structure, there's a great deal of potential for movement. It's been an interesting thing to watch the studies within genetics as they have evolved. Just not too long ago, it was thought that you were born with some billion cells within your brain, and that those could not be regenerated. Whatever you had is what you have, and that's it. Now they're saying that you can create new brain cells. And new brain cells can come into being through your behavior, through action, and even through thought. So as we think, we become. There is much more control that we have over this body than we normally exhibit. Master used to demonstrate in front of large crowds his ability to be able to control his own body. He would bring up two doctors. The doctors would take his pulse, one on one arm and the other on the other arm. And Master would demonstrate that he could have one pulse in one arm and a different pulse in the other arm. And then he could, while still conscious, have no pulse at all. And so the doctors would measure this and report it out to all the people who were there. And he did this in order to demonstrate what we might be able to achieve through our own will and attunement to the divine creator. If you think about your own personal computer, and you have little or no knowledge of how it works, but you can do a few things, you operate within the structure of that program. But if you get behind the scenes and look at the language that that computer was created with and know how to manipulate that, you can begin to change the very code by which things operate by. You can change the language. You can change the basic operating structure. In a similar way, most people are victims, you might say, of their circumstance. Although that's not ever true in any complete way, because we are creators, or at least co-creators of our circumstance. We have, through our own free choice, chosen to come into this life. Now, we don't always think that we have, and we certainly don't always remember that moment of choice. Nevertheless, that is true. It's not surprising that we don't remember back into the dim history where we made such choices. Most people have very little or no memory of who they were before they were 5 or 6 or 7 years old, just fragment memories perhaps. So how much more deeply hidden within the subconscious mind are those much more distant kinds of choices that we made? Nevertheless, we made those choices. We wanted this human experience. We wanted, as a soul, as an individualized part of God, we wanted to move into this material realm and experience what this was like. We wanted to gain self-mastery. And of course, as with any game, and this life is a game in that sense, we are given the means to be able to escape out of that game life, but it doesn't always happen in one instant, because we have sown in so much into the programming that it makes it difficult. Those basic ideas, those fundamental ideas that we are separate from God, that we have no part in universal consciousness, the idea that we are victimized by our life, that very notion itself is something that has been born into us through our own activity, through our own behavior, through our own thinking. So we have to reprogram ourselves. And there is no better way to reprogram yourself than to attune yourself with the divine consciousness. We are all born with a destiny. And there is one destiny of a lifetime. One great destiny of a lifetime. And that destiny is to proclaim our freedom. Everyone wants freedom. No one would ever say, I don't want my freedom. And most of all, we want freedom from the suffering that we have incurred upon ourselves as a result of the separation from the divine consciousness. We all miss it. Now, not everybody has properly defined what the problem is. There's a wonderful inventor one time who felt that he had to just properly define the problem. His name was Eastman, of George Eastman. And if he properly defined the problem, then he would be able to find the answer. It was inevitable. But the real The real question was to be able to properly define the problem. And so when he developed the instant developing film that came in an Instamatic, that seems like an archaic thing, but at the time it was cutting-edge technology. And he felt that he had properly defined the problem, and he built the factory, and he had it all ready to go 5 years before he found the solution. That's faith. Faith that he had properly defined what the problems are. The problem is most people don't sit down long enough to really think about their lives, to really find out what the definition of life's problem really is. Most people act out of instinct. Most people act out of patterns that they themselves have created or that the world has handed to them. And so they think, if I have a particular amount of money or power or prestige, or if I'm able to get this or that thing, then I will be able to find happiness, lasting happiness. Of course, once I get those things, then I have to maintain them, then I have to keep them. And so there seems to be no end to the worries in this world, because whatever you have in the outer sense can be taken away from you. There is the life of Job, where he had everything taken away from him. And the test was, would he still love God? If his family turned against him, if his business turned against him, if his health turned against him? Sure, it's easy to think life is all right as long as everything is going your way. But what about those times when life doesn't go your way? As human beings, we tend to become insulated. We contract. We move further away from the very source of life, intelligence, and power that can really help us out of a problem. So to properly define what the problem is in your life, how to find real and lasting happiness and freedom, I think you would find that this is a universal prospect that everyone would be enthused and excited about. And then the next step is, where do you find that? And the solution is right within you, right within you. And this is where people lose their imagination. They lose any real concept that they have anything inside of them other than what they currently find. And so we can set out on a great adventure to find the ultimate destiny in our life. Now, I don't know why, but in this lifetime, I was born with some kind of impulse to find that answer. And when I looked around me in my early teens, I didn't find the answers. I thought it might come originally through religion, and that didn't seem to hit the mark. And then I thought it might come through science, and that didn't hit the mark. And then I looked all around me at the adults and the other people in my life, and I didn't see anybody that I thought had that answer that I was looking for. It was unarticulated. I wasn't exactly sure what the distress was, but I knew that there was an inner emptiness inside of me. And so that set me out on the path, and I really wasn't a willing passenger on that bus. I didn't want to go there. I really wanted to find happiness in the ways that I saw other people finding happiness, but that wasn't to be. And what I thought of as a curse at the time, I now count as a blessing. And you know, this is a great secret in life, because this oftentimes happens, doesn't it? The very things that we think are a problem in the moment, if we lose a job, if we have something that doesn't go our way, and we're really disturbed by this. And then that leads to some opportunity. It takes us out of a pattern, perhaps, that we're stuck in. And we don't even know how stuck we're in it until we get into a new job or we get into a new situation and we realize how much happier we are. Then we look back and we say, well, that's the best thing that ever happened to me, to get fired from that job, because I didn't really like it and it wasn't that fulfilling. And so this becomes the way of our life. We begin to see that not everything is as it seems. Well, when I looked around my life at the time, everything seemed all right. I was an all right student, and I was a good athlete, and I had friends and all the rest of it. And yet inside, there is a burning passion for something. I had no name for it. But I knew what I saw around me was not going to fulfill it. And then, as destiny would have it, my guru called to me and brought me into her presence. And then I began to understand I began to have a language for what it was that I was yearning for. She didn't give me that yearning because I came with that somehow, but she is able to help me to understand it, articulate it into a goal, and then gave me the tools and the means in order to achieve that goal. And so soon after meeting her, she gave Kriya that very spring, and I came to understand that she had not given Kriya for 7 years previous to that. Well, I had never heard of God when I met Mother, not in any kind of a way in many, many years that I felt any kinship with. And I wasn't sure that I liked the word. Usually when I heard the word God, I was looking for the nearest exit. How do I get out of here? Because I expected some kind of sermon or speech given to me. And some kind of immature idea that I couldn't accept. I had enough of that. But Mother used the word, and Christ consciousness, I didn't know what that was either. But it kind of intrigued me because I didn't know what it was, and I hadn't heard the term before. And so all of these things were coming through to me, but most of all was the being in the presence of Mother, feeling the uplifting spirit in her, feeling that she had a tremendous power flowing from her that I could not in any other way understand other than that it came from God, just exactly as she said. But it took a long time for my mind to catch up with this, and I had many doubts, and I wasn't what you might call an easy sell. I questioned a lot of things because I didn't want to just learn a dogmatic approach to God. I wanted to know God. I wanted to realize that divine spirit. And unless that was part of the package, I didn't want anything to do with it. I was only in it for truth. And that has remained until this day. Because just learning an idea, just learning a philosophy, that's all right. But unless it serves you, unless it takes you someplace, why do it? I remember a friend of mine who was pursuing a PhD in philosophy. And so I asked him soon after I met him, well, what is this philosopher Levinas? What does he talk about? Well, it's hard to explain. Well, just give me a little hint. And he had a difficulty just even giving me a hint about it. And then I asked him, how has this changed your life? How has it improved it? And he says, well, it hasn't. It's like a puzzle that I'm trying to figure out. And I thought, what's the use of that? It's like an intellectual game that you enter upon, but there's no real advancement. How does that make you happier? How does it improve your lot in your life? And there are many people who are like this. They'll study the history of religions and philosophies, but they do it from an intellectual pursuit. And perhaps to show off their knowledge and what they know and what they've learned. I have absolutely no interest in that kind of thing. Perhaps I've had it in the past, and I had my fill with it. I realize it's not the proper way to define the problem. And the problem is ignorance. But it's not ignorance in an intellectual sort of way. It's ignorance in knowing that divine consciousness. In order to be able to access that divine consciousness, that's the ignorance that we're talking about, and that can only be resolved not through the mind, but through going beyond the mind. And so as I delve further into Mother's teachings and how she directed me in my own sadhana, I began to have those experiences that began to lift me up. And one day, as I have talked about before, I had the awakening within the heart center. And it was tremendous. It was preceded by a tremendous uplift in kundalini as I felt this power surge up through my spine to my ajna. And that it burned so much there, I felt I could have fried eggs on it. It was so hot. And it surprised me how visceral this all was, how physical it felt. That these experiences that come affect the body, and the energy body and the idea body or the causal body. It affects you on every level of consciousness. And so when this power surged up through my spine, I was thrilled in one sense, but I was absolutely riveted to the ajna, and it was painful to some degree. But because I recognized in it something of what Mother had taught about, then I was also thrilled. And this is one of the great things that we have from Mother, is that she talked about, in intimate terms, so much about the inner experiences and what we are to expect when we come to this. So through the agency of the divine consciousness within her and through my own will of dedicating myself towards this mission of interiorizing the mind, this power awakened inside of me. And it began to take me places, I can tell you. But when it happens, it is beyond your control, my control, anybody's control. It is really something that is so powerful and so intelligent that you stand aside as an amazed witness. And there are times, of course, when it touches in with your deepest fears. Our deepest fears around control. Our deepest fears around what will happen to me. Will I even continue to exist? And so in this heart center is the first stage of the mystical crucifixion. And you are tossed back and forth between the poles of opposites within that fourth chakra. You go between wanting to open your heart and feeling the past and wanting to close your heart. Now, when people hear divine love, they sometimes think about perhaps poetry or kind of a sentimental kind of gushy love. But divine love is different than that. You can certainly approach God with that kind of love, but the love that gets exhibited within your own heart isn't that kind of sentimentality. Rather, it is a kind of love that lifts your consciousness into divine realms, and it puts you in touch with all creation around you. The first time that I had my heart center open, it flew open in a big way. And I felt that I was in an ocean of love, that the cells of the air, the atoms, the particles all around me that I could see and that I couldn't see were all charged with this divine love. I felt myself swimming in this ocean of love. And it was incredible. It was freeing. And it was beyond anything I could have imagined before that moment. And it began to fulfill my heart's desire. Through that divine love, I felt my connection with the divine. But not only with the divine, but I started to feel my connection with all creation. First through nature and then through people. You know, I think many of us have that kind of a thing where it's easier to love nature in its pure sense than it is people, because with people we sometimes run into hardships and difficulties and they trigger the old patterns inside of us. So it is a process of purification of the heart center. And so it takes you through many, many experiences. And some of them are not pleasant and some of them are not kind in the sense that you have to face yourself. And you face yourself and all the people that you meet. Some people are closed off and they represent that nature within yourself. Other people are more open. And so you feel your heart opening more with them. And then there are a few who have a wide open heart center. And with them you feel that kind of simplicity. You feel that love. I felt that the greatest in my own guru, Mother Hamilton. And I also felt it within Swami Satchidananda. And it's a tremendous divine love. It goes beyond anything personal. And as you feel that love on the outside and also within you, it purifies your heart to where that's all that exists at some point. There's nothing else that exists. And then you rise up into the next center, and that's the center of the next mystical crucifixion. You see, this is part of your great destiny too, as you go through these three stages, what is said to be the 3 days of the mystical crucifixion of Jesus. represents each one of these stages. And so the next stage is the fifth chakra. And there I felt a great stone in my throat. And it lasted there for many years. And I was born into this life very reticent to show myself to this world. And through that fifth chakra is through speech. And through speech we project spirit into this world, but not just any spirit. It is the spirit of Dharma, the spirit of righteousness, the spirit of what is right. And many of us are reticent to stand up for ourselves, to speak out when we feel that something needs to be corrected. This cannot be when your fifth chakra is completely open. It does not make you a braggart. It does not make you a know-it-all or anything like that. What it makes you is deeply attuned to what is right and what is wrong. You feel a refinement happening within you. It's not something that you learn with the mind. In all three of these, the mind is set aside more and more. Use the mind to the degree that you direct it as long as it needs direction. But when that inner flow, when that inner consciousness begins to awaken inside of you, then you stand aside and you're much more of the witness. If you think about these fine athletes that I've been watching on the Olympics, many of us have been watching, and you think about when they first learned about their sport, and with great intention and with great concentration, they learned to stand upon those skates or upon those skis, and they gradually developed a body memory around it. And as they developed a body memory around it, they began to let go of having to focus so much of their attention just standing on those skates or just being able to twirl around them. And they tuned into something more. They tuned in to where they knew, somewhere deep in their subconscious mind, how to do that so perfectly. And when they get truly into that flow, they're lifted up, as it were. And they feel it moving through them rather than trying to make it all happen in just the way that they want it. This is a great leap in consciousness. And for some athletes, it's such a high that they keep going back to it year after year trying to develop it, but they just find that it's a brief experience. What it is a glimpse into divine consciousness, and they want more of it. And sometimes they run into trouble afterwards because it's not just the accolades that they get from being victorious. It's that tremendous sense of high of being in that flow. And since that's not always readily available to them because they haven't learned how, they use drugs or drink or they get into other kinds of problems, have depression, because they can't match the experience that they had in those few brief moments when they went beyond themselves and they lived in that divine consciousness. And so this is a great thing when this happens. And when you feel this inner knowing flowing through this fifth chakra, and it reveals to you, Jesus said an interesting thing. And he said it from this Christ consciousness. He says, I do not judge. But if I judge, my judgment will be true. Now, which is it? Does he judge or does he not judge? He seems to be saying both things. And when you understand it from this perspective, you understand perfectly that judgment can flow through you. It's not from you. It comes from a higher source. And so I, in my little mind, I, in my little judgment, I do not judge. But if that judgment comes from divine consciousness, if the I that judges is the supreme I, not the little I, then that judgment is true. And that truth shall stand the test of time until the end of creation. So this is a tremendous thing that we have capacity for. That just wasn't for Jesus. That's for everyone who attains sonship with God. And to all those who believed upon him, gave he power to become sons of God. You see, this is something that is open and available to all of us. And that is regardless of your religion or your philosophy or anything else, as long as you are in the business of attuning yourself to this Dharma, to this consciousness, this higher consciousness of what is true and what is not true, what is right and what is not right. And then moving through that. And that's not an easy thing because you get tempted. You get a lot of things coming at you. And sometimes you think it's God's direction even. And it's not. And it takes you off in the wrong direction. Now you're faced with a choice. You have fallen to that degree. And that happened to me. And then you have to ask yourself, so what am I going to do with that now? Am I going to pick myself back up and get going again? Or do I give up? Or do I lose faith that this has any value to me? Because I thought that was the divine impulse flowing through me, and I was wrong. Now, in truth, there is a part of me who questioned it all along. But I didn't question it hard enough, and I didn't hold myself to a high enough standard. There is a story in the Mahabharata of Yudhishthira, and he is the eldest of the Pandavas, the five brothers, and they represent the five chakras, and he represents that fifth chakra. And he gambles in the Mahabharata, in the story. And through that gambling, he loses everything, including himself, including his wife, including his brothers, including his kingdom, and everything that he has. And he is known to be a dharmic person. That is his persona. And you think to yourself, how could this person who practices such discrimination fall into such straits? And I've wondered about that for many years, and it wasn't until last month that God gave me the answer to this. And the answer is that he represents, in this case, the negative charge of the fifth chakra. And in that, you begin to play fast and loose with the truth. You begin to think that you're a little bit above it all. And one of the challenges that comes to you at this time is that you are in that flow. You do feel God flowing through you. And you can even go off track for a bit, and it doesn't seem to affect your connection with God. You still feel it. And so you begin to think that perhaps you're a little bit above the law. And unfortunately, we've seen in different public figures and different spiritual masters who have reached some attainment of fame, and they've fallen from the path, and you think, well, were they a sham and a charlatan from the beginning? And in most cases, no. But they faced that, and they thought that they had gone above the law. And they wanted what they wanted, and so they took it. And they fell as a result. Now, the question I say, as before, what do you do with that? Do you get right back on and get on track again? Or do you take it as some excuse to keep going? Do you begin to blame other people? Do you begin to get defensive about the whole thing? And of course, what is required is our complete and total humility. I made a mistake here. I made an error. And it not only hurt myself, but perhaps it hurt other people as well. And it causes a deep pain. Sri Yukteswar said that up in the astral heavens where he now teaches, that even a slight mistake made in error of judgment causes great pain. And this is so. This is so. That's not only where he happens to be teaching now, but it's when you achieve that state of consciousness of those that he is working with at that place. And so then you go into the Christ consciousness, and this is a wonderful freeing place. Here, more than ever, you discover your oneness with God. And yet, there is a thin veil of separation between you and the divine. I asked Swami Sri Satchitananda at one time whether he had attained total divine consciousness, and he said no. He went on to explain that to be in total divine consciousness requires absolutely no effort on the individual. It is part and parcel, those are my words, not his, part and parcel of your being at that time. And so there is no separation, therefore there is no need for effort. And he didn't go into any more specifics, but apparently he felt that he continued to need to make effort in order to maintain his consciousness on the divine, and because of that, he was judging that he had not yet attained that total supreme freedom that he had in mind. Now, he is a wonderful testament to absolute honesty, simplicity. He had no pretensions about himself whatsoever. And the spiritual path, when followed genuinely, will do this to you. It brings you to your knees, not in a negative way even, but because you are brought to your knees through circumstances, you realize your helplessness. You realize, as Jesus said, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. You stand aside as that witness, but as long as there is the witness and there is a supreme being or supreme consciousness that is anything different than yourself, you have not yet attained that total consciousness. And so in the Christ consciousness, you still have duality. You still have duality. You still operate individually separate from the divine consciousness, even though you sense and feel your oneness with that consciousness. It's a fine, fine distinction. And at that point comes total surrender. Total surrender. And as Mother said, that individual is rare to find in this world. One who can completely and totally surrender themselves. Swami Ashokananda, whom she knew in India, he performed many miracles. He did so many things. He was such a tremendous aspirant. And one day he asked Mother, can you give me what I want? And in the beginning she thought, well, he's asking something more from me to give to God, something more to surrender. And so she went away with that thought, but that night God said, no, that's not what he meant. He is looking for complete illumination from you. And she was shocked because she had such tremendous regard for this great God-man, and he was great. So the next day she told him what God had said to her, and he said, yes, that's true. He said, I went up to the ocean, but I could not dive into it. I held myself back. This is a man who ran away from home when he was 9 years old because his brothers harassed him for wanting to meditate. He lived out in the jungles for so many years that all of his clothes fell away from him. He's completely naked. He is subject to all the elements. He told God, how can I meditate upon you when I'm so cold? And so God made him immune to all the elements. And no matter how cold or how hot it got, he was perfectly at ease and was able to concentrate his mind. He healed people. He raised the dead. He put his finger into the ground, and out came springs of water that was able to provide water for his ashram. He grew breasts at one point, and he wet-nursed an infant whose mother had died. This is a tremendous God-man with tremendous powers, and yet he got up to the ocean, and he couldn't completely go in himself. And he recognized another, one who had done that. And could she give him what he was looking for? This is no small task, you see. It's a tremendous mechanism for transformation. It fulfills that destiny that you were born to come into this world with. But you know, if it was not a tremendous kind of task for us to do, and if we didn't have to face everything about ourselves, we wouldn't really respect it. We wouldn't really think that we had accomplished all that much. But when you have to face yourself on every single level, there's no hiding from it. And it levels you to the ground again and again. And it requires every bit of your courage and your will to continue on. Then you know that you've done something. And then in the end, there's not even a knower of what you've done. Because then you see that it was God who was the doer all the way through. And you merge into that divine being. And now there is nothing but you. Nothing but you in the divine sense. There is not you, and there is all you. You take your choice. You see, the human mind can't really comprehend such a state. Because the human mind operates on subject-object, on duality. And now you've transcended duality, and it is no more. It is no more. And you have fulfilled what you have come to do. Now, the other day marked a day of my birthday. And sometimes it gets you to thinking. Such anniversaries, New Year's and birthdays, I think, are two times when you think about your life. And are you on track? Are you doing what you've come to do? And I think that's a question that is good for me and is good for all of us to help keep us on track. Am I striving for this ultimate goal with everything that I have? Or am I holding back? Am I secretly guarding some little area within my life that I'm really afraid to expose to the divine light of day? And if that is the case, you can go for lifetimes like that. But there is no neutral in going forward on the path. Either you're going forward or you are not. And if you are not, you are going backwards because you are constantly creating. And if you are creating with an ignorant mind, you will create ignorance. And that will grow inside of you. So you always have to be moving forward, you see. And this is a great thing around individual will versus God's creation. That you accept, to some degree, your current day situation. You accept it as perfect for you. But part of your acceptance is that God gave you desire to be better and to grow and to become more. And so you accept that as perfect as well. You see, you don't have to deny that. So you are striving and you are accepting all at the same time. And in this way, you can have perfect peace being exactly where you're at as long as you know that you are doing everything in your power to rise up to that ultimate state of consciousness. And so you can have that peace. You can have that joy. Right now. That's not just something that comes into the future. I would like to close with this poem from Kabir. Many of Lari Mahasya's disciples considered Lari Mahasya a reincarnation of Kabir. And he's a wonderful mystical poet. And this is one of his quatrains that comes from a translation by Rabindranath Tagore, the great poet. It is the mercy of my true guru that has made me know the unknown. I have known from him how to walk without feet, to see without eyes, to hear without ears, to drink without mouth, to fly without wings. I have brought my love and my meditation into the land where there is no sun and moon, no day and night. Without eating, I have tasted of the sweetness of nectar, and without water, I have quenched my thirst. Where there is the response of delight, there is the fullness of joy. Before whom can that joy be uttered? Kabir says, the guru is great beyond words, and great is the good fortune of the disciple. And I will close with that in reflecting upon my life, that the great thing that stands out to me is that through no merit of my own, my guru called to me and brought me to her. And that through her agency, that I have been brought upon this path and that I have tread upon this path. And even with faltering steps, I have been loved, I have been encouraged, sometimes scolded. All with the ideal in mind that I should be able to taste of that eternal heavenly kingdom even as she lived in that kingdom. And that it should transform my life. And all I can say is that every promise that she made to me has been kept. And who may we say this of in this entire life other than a true guru? So my loving pronouns goes out to her, and that she has chosen us all to come together as friends and to walk this path together. I can think of nothing greater than that in my life. When I first came to this path, I had no friends upon this path at all. I had friends in life, but not spiritual family. And it's such a great blessing to me, I feel, to be able to have kindred spirits as we walk upon this path to the divine. Not one behind another, but all of us together, facing toward the light and living in that divine consciousness and learning that we are indeed divine beings chosen to take incarnation in these human little human bodies. But it has never affected who and what we are. And that the destiny of a lifetime has been realized right within our own life. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging through every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
I bow to the light within you. I thank you for bringing your light of God, that this is not a one-person show by any means at all, but it's a synergy that creates a wonderful aura that goes out to this world, and its strength is unimaginable. Jesus once said, "Where two or more are gathered, there I shall be." This is a tremendous promise, and one never to forget.